This is episode 21 of the Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
Chief Garvey has secured the pie. Pie is secure. Over. Very interesting family, those Murphys. Hard to tell if they're part of your story or you're part of theirs. I'll see you when you get home, Kevin. I'm not going anywhere!
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk about A Matter of Geography. Suddenly I'm here. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. Hi everyone, I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I hate cinder blocks.
Cinder blocks?
Cinder blocks, it's the thing that was tied to Kevin's foot.
Oh yeah.
See, well, how did you not get that?
I don't know, I called it like a bed lift in college.
A bed lift?
Didn't you, see, oh, we talked about this. You went to a different school than I did. See, us poor folk, we raised our beds in college with cinder blocks so we could put things underneath.
Oh, okay, no, we did that too.
Yeah,
We did that too, I mean.
Were they golden-flected?
Golden-flected?
I don't know. I'm just trying to be super fancy.
See, in our major suites that we had, that were palatial, we didn't really have to lift our beds.
That's
up.
What I'm getting at. Me and my micro rooms with like mold on the wall.
Oh,
we do. We would take trips to Home Depot that would make sense. If your friend had a truck, you'd be like, "Hey, can you take us all to Home Depot so we can all get cinder blocks to raise our beds?" So I like cinder blocks because of that reason.
But I've never heard them called as a bed lift. Oh, sweetheart, what's your Damon rating for this evening? This episode.
This episode is a 5.
5 Damons.
Yeah.
Why are you giving it 5?
Because it was amazing. From start to finish, I got to be with the people who I loved. Mm-hmm. I was so confused. Multiple times I went, what? 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 Yeah. Okay. There was lots of audible gasps. It was beautiful. I liked the music a lot. You know, I just had a good time. All around great time. 5.
Well, before I give my Damon rating, we actually had some listeners come in on Facebook and Twitter and give their Damon ratings. And the first one was Anna Eugenia Martinez. And if I got that right, I am so freaking smart. She chimed in on Facebook. She said, it was 3.5 Damons for the first half and 4 for the second half. It was a good episode, but it really didn't pick up until the very end, once the Garveys, or the Garvey Dursts, were in Texas. Kevin losing his mind and with Patty is always an interesting angle. I mean, uh-oh, indeed.
Suzanne Marone Carew said, no way that episode was a straight-up 5 Damons. No Nikki and Palos last night.
That's someone who got the reference with the last episode.
Yes.
Carrie Murphy Bean says, definitely 4.5. I really loved seeing the visitor center. A bit disappointed that they didn't line up Kevin getting his owie from Patty to the noise that John heard while talking to Nora at the door last week. This week it came before John knocked. Excellent point, Carrie. Fantastic detective work.
Missy Gortiz on Twitter said that she gives it 3 million Damons. Okay, she'll just give it 5.
Maybe 5. All right, my Damon rating for this week, I'm giving it 4.5.
Okay.
4.5 Damons because it was an absolutely tremendous episode, especially when you couple it with the first episode. Part of me almost wishes that this was a two-parter. You know, mm-hmm. It was a two-part premiere because when you see it in conjunction with the first one, everything makes sense.
I think it was a two-part premiere, in my opinion.
How's that?
It was the same time frame.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes, it was. You know what it actually really reminded me of? It reminded me of Lost Season 2.
We have to go back, Kate.
It reminded me of Lost Season 2, because remember in the premiere of Lost Season 2, the first 3 episodes, it was the same events. It all started in the hatch, and you saw Desmond's point of view, spoiler alert, and then all of a sudden you saw Jack's point of view the next episode, and then the 3rd episode, you saw Kate's point of view the whole time.
Whoa. Okay. Yes, it is a lot like Lost.
Yeah, we have a new sound, by the way, for Lost.
We have to go back, Kate.
Anytime any one of us makes Lost reference, that's going to be played.
And by anytime anyone, it means every time Blake.
But I really liked it. It wasn't perfect. It didn't get me emotional like Guest or The Garbys at Their Best. Those are two perfect episodes.
Oh, I get emotional.
Episodes. Well, I mean, I guess I'm confusing emotional with emotion. Like emotional meaning like.
Ooh, you're so astute, sir. Tell me more.
But I mean, like, you know, like getting sad or crying or whatever. Like, those episodes grabbed me.
I got different emotions in this one. I got angry. I got frustrated. Mm-hmm. So I did get a lot of emotions in this one. All right. So next, what did we forget? All right, so this is one thing that I was having a deep conversation with Blake in regards to last week's episode. So there was that moment where Evie and her mom, Erica, were having a conversation.
Oh, yes, that's right.
In sign language. And mm-hmm. John walked by and he kind of like looked at it. And to me, I took that as John does not know sign language. Now, here's why. Just walk with me through this for a second. Mm-hmm. When two characters are speaking in a different language, generally, there are subtitles in a show. Unless, like, they don't think you really need to know what it is. But if you are supposed to understand that the person who you're with right now, we were kind of with John, we were in John's point of view at that time. If he understood what they were saying, they might have had some subtitles. Mm-hmm. And instead, he just kind of glanced and
he had this confused, almost like, what are they talking about?
Like, maybe he just thinks it's girl talk, like they're talking about boys or periods or something. But I thought it was really interesting because why did Erica not have her hearing aids in? Why were they talking in sign language?
Sure.
Why were they doing something that other people couldn't be a part of? What? So I think that this is some female, mojo stuff going on. I don't know. Birds naked running around. Something girls. It's not boys and it's not periods. I think it's some kind of magical unknown thing that they were talking about. And this is a call to any of you who know sign language.
Yes, please.
I would love for you to dissect that part of that first episode. The only sign language I know is more, all done, and banana.
That's because we know baby sign language.
Yeah. So, and milk. But if any of you understand what was said in that scene, please shoot us an email.
Then we also missed, we didn't miss it, but we just didn't really talk about it, is the guy praying with the son, Michael, in the trailer, who eventually, spoiler alert, runs into Kevin saying he can help him with his problem.
Yeah, and I think that's why we didn't mention it last week, because it was such a little thing, and now that we saw that guy again and he got all up in Kevin's face, we're like, ooh, this guy is something.
But it makes you wonder, who is this guy? Why does he live in a trailer outside of, well, not outside of the park, but, you know, where he is, and why is Michael hiding it from John, from his father? What's the point?
I don't think you would like to know that your son rides his bike to a Christmas light decorated trailer after
and hours. And pray with a random dude.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what else did we forget? One more thing.
The last thing was the ripples in the pavement. And
the like cement?
Yeah, in the cement. Yeah, okay. In the big things. And they were in the plastic boxes with the numbers marking them. So yes. Like it was like 7 or 18 or whatever. You know, there's some good listener feedback on this, so I will leave it to the listeners I will give them the credit. But we didn't, it's not that we didn't talk about them, they weren't a big part of our conversation. And they're obviously big for something, like they're a part of something. So,
yeah.
I don't know, but I wanted to mention that those are the things that we forgot.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, my love, what's the title for this week's episode?
A Matter of Geography.
So what do you think?
This is about something special about where something is. I think it is very straightforward. Of course, the whole episode talks about it. Nora talked to the MIT guys, and they were like, oh, we think it's because, you know, of where you are, and that's why so many people disappeared right here at this table, and she bugged out. And no one left from Jardin.
That's correct.
So we're talking about places that may have been departure sites for an important reason because of where they're located in Jardin. And we talked last week about it being the Axis Mundi. Mm-hmm. So once again, a location, a center of the world.
Not a girl. Look at you. The one thing that you're also missing too that I think it also applies to this is the fact that Evie departed. She departed from this one specific area at the where the Axis Mundi potentially really is when you saw the cave woman's die. She departed, in quotes, at this lake or at this spring.
You know what I don't like? If she actually departed, though, is why didn't the fish depart? Because the dogs departed, so I don't think this is a real departure.
I don't think. Hey, my last week's Sudden Theory of the Week says that she faked it. I got a feeling that she did fake it.
Because animals departed.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
All right, my love. Let's just get into it.
All right, the Garveys. Here we are, hanging out. Lots of things going on with the Garveys. We could talk about Nora, as you just said. Nora gets a visit from some MIT grads, and she learns...
Well, it actually starts off right from the beginning. Like, right at the end of season one, Nora walking up
with the baby.
To the house with the baby, seeing Kevin. It was cathartic to see. It's showing that they're leaving nothing behind from last season.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
I do.
They're starting right up, right from the beginning.
Maybe this even helps, too, because so many people felt like the first episode was totally different and out of nowhere. And here it is to say, oh, no, this is still the same story.
Well,
prove it to you, we're going to show you where it continues.
Would you rather have started with this episode than the previous episode? Or do you like it the way that it all began?
I don't know. I don't know when I would want a cave woman in the show. So I guess they just had to do it in the beginning to show that this place, for some reason, might be a little special. And
well, let's strike the cave woman out. Let's say that she don't exist. I mean, that's hard to do because, you know, cave woman does exist. She's right there. So let's just say it starts off in Jardin the way that it did with Evie and the water and everything.
Yes.
Cave woman aside, do you think this episode fits where it begins, or do you think it should have been the first one?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's hard for me to say. What you must have some opinion on this since you're asking.
I mean, I got an opinion on it. It's hard because, you know, for the people who are just casual fans, to see a cave woman and then to go straight into Jardin and the Murphys and people that you don't know, they're like, what the hell is this? I thought I was watching The Leftovers. Like, I kind of got into this show towards the end last season, had a rough beginning. Fine, I'll accept that for some people. But the end got great. Now I'm back again, and what are we watching? So I could see how the first episode would upset casual viewers. Now, for viewers like us, like who are total nerds and we're into The Leftovers and we love Damon Lindelof, we get it. Because he pulls shit out of his ass all the time, and nearly 90% of it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. I get it. But I wonder if it's just for the casual viewing audience, would this work better if this episode started first? Because it's all the characters that they love. It's more of a linear storyline.
Well, I guess we're going to have to revisit that at the end of the season because it'll be interested to see who the main family really is this season. Mm-hmm. Is it the Murphys or is it the Garveys? And if it's the Murphys, then they needed to start with the Murphys.
And which is why we played that clip at the beginning of the episode, because first of all, that's genius writing, because you don't know who the main characters are. Like, you fell in love with the Garveys of the first season, but just because you fell in love with them the first season doesn't mean that they are the actual catalyst or main focus of this story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not the Skywalkers of Star Wars, potentially. They are characters in a much larger story, and Patty is the one who brings that up. Now, is that Patty just being Patty, or is that Kevin being Kevin, right? I don't know.
I don't know either. Kevin's lost it, man.
Yep, I don't know.
Okay, so, if you want to start from the very beginning, it's a very good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that. It's because you don't have Sound of Music, you fool. It's part of a song. Start at the very beginning. Anyone who has Sound of Music will be raising their fist in the air saying, way to go, Mary. Anyway, so the Garveys get this baby. And with this, Nora says, like, can we keep her? And suddenly she, Jill, and Kevin are like, they pretty much put their hands in a circle and yell, go team, we're a family. And they lay it all out on the table.
Great conversation.
Oh, my gosh. Because, of course, you know, they say, we really don't know each other. Okay, well, what do you need to know? Right. Well, I walk in my sleep. I kill Patty. Well, actually, she killed herself. And then I called your brother because we like buried her, but I didn't kill her, and nobody knows. And I smoke. I like how we ended it with I smoke. Nora says, "It's all right. I hire prostitutes to shoot me." And then Jill's like, "Do I need to say something weird? Because that I won't fit in."
Good tension breaker. Great writing all around. It's great because it starts everybody off fresh.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Kevin doesn't admit to some of the things that are bothering him, though. Doesn't admit to the voices. And he doesn't admit to the voices even later on. Does not admit to Patty even later on with Nora.
Yes.
So even though this was a brilliantly executed scene, you know that he's still holding back, and as much as you want to believe that this is going to be okay, it's kind of hard to do that. Because, you know, if they even have that line multiple times. Nora says, it's okay.
Yep.
It's okay. And I guess for the most part, it is okay, because now they are telling the truth. They are upfront with it, with each other.
I think the reason Kevin doesn't say anything is because Kevin doesn't want it to be true. He isn't acknowledging Patty. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, oh, I loved that scene when they were in the tent and he was, you know, closing his eyes because he didn't want to see up there. It's like when you're a little kid and you're told if you close your eyes, it doesn't exist. So part of me thinks Kevin is not acknowledging Patty in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could. I mean, he said a lot of stuff to Nora. He could have easily been like, yeah, and by the way, I hear voices. My dad does too. This is what's going on. One of them is Patty. She's probably here with me right now.
Mm-hmm.
He could have said that, and she would have been like, all right, let's do this. But I think Kevin doesn't even want to acknowledge it to himself, because then it's real.
Sure. He knows he's turning into his dad.
Yes.
He knows it, and I think that eats at him. It goes back to that conversation in season one when he says, Dad, it is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and of course, Kevin's dad says, cut the shit. It is enough. Relax. And this was in the Garveys at their best. It makes you almost wonder if Kevin is having the same doubts later on about his own life. Again, even with Nora and a much less angsty Jill. it makes you wonder if he's falling into that same trap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's losing his mind, and he's going crazy, and things are happening around him. It makes you wonder.
Well, Kevin has these voices throughout the entire episode. I don't know if it's multiple voices or if it just is Patty.
Mm-hmm.
He's drowning it out constantly with this music. So he's in the laundromat. We see him, you know, even when he's, as I said, in the tent. So he's here in the laundromat. It is so loud that he can't even hear the baby Lily crying.
How uncomfortable did that make you?
Well, I'll tell you this. I used to do that when I baby wore my kid and he had severe colic, which actually drove me into postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. Not a lie. I would listen to music that loud. And one of the coolest things that I heard, I went to a colic clinic. He was so bad that we had to go to a clinic for colic. And they told me, they said, if he's crying, he's alive. He's breathing.
Yep.
And once I realized that, I thought, okay, he's alive, but I'm losing my mind and I need to block this out and I just need noise. So I would wear him and wear really, really loud headphones. So when I saw Kevin doing this, I was like, why is he, what is he hiding from? Because that was me.
Mm-hmm.
And he is hiding from a much scarier thing than a colicky baby. I tell you what.
He's hiding from Wayne's baby. No.
So really, really scary things. He's out in the parking lot, looks for the baby. And you pointed out something really cool about it being just like the opening scene of season one.
From season one, exactly. With the lady in the car and she's talking on the phone, putting the baby in. Yeah, hold on 1 second. He goes, talks to the baby. Yeah, it's fine. Goes back to the phone and the camera pans to the front of the car. And it pans back to the car, but the baby is still there, obviously, this time. What an excellent callback to Peter Berg's direction. And Mimi Leader, as we had talked with Tom Parada, if you get a chance, go back to listen to our interview with Tom Parada. He said that she, Mimi Leader, has taken Peter Berg's direction and created her own version of it. And this was an excellent homage to the first season.
Kevin drives to go make Lily really part of his family by going to the adoption place. Mm-hmm. I would not have let that guy adopt a baby. He did not answer those questions very well.
I feel like it was meant to be.
But you know what? The gentleman liked him so much that he was like, oh, you like this baby? Well, check out this other baby.
Whose baby is that? It's a white baby.
It's a white baby. Because at first I was like, oh, man, maybe it's another one of Holy Wayne's babies. Because everyone's like, oh, it's not the Holy One. It's around the same age. But it wasn't a black baby. And it wasn't a black Asian baby. So, and we know that that's how Holy Wayne rolled. So I don't know. I don't know whose baby that was.
And it's conspicuous, right? Because they're calling it out. They're calling it out for a reason.
I didn't know if he was doing it because he thought that they might want a white baby. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if that was it, or if exactly is there someone else who's pregnant that we were supposed to be thinking about that had a baby recently that put it up for adoption. I don't know. The whole part really confused me.
But either way, I mean, it's still being offered up.
Yeah.
And here's the thing too, Kevin, he is definitely losing his grip in Mapleton, because all this stuff is taking place in Mapleton. The very beginning of the episode takes place in where they were originally, mm-hmm. right? He's definitely losing his grip because he's losing track of the times that he's supposed to be there with Nora, and the washing machine is broken. He's referring to that, and he's listening to the music left and right. Just because the guilty remnant have gone away, just because Patty is dead, doesn't mean that he's okay.
No, it means it's worse.
Yeah.
God, I mean, she's with him.
And now he's seeing her, right?
She's with him all the time. And that's why he went and dug up her body.
Yes. Now, why did you think he did that?
To make sure she was in the ground. Mm-hmm. And it was weird because here he was.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's a great one.
Oh, thank you.
That's a great take.
Oh, maybe she was a vampire.
I mean, it's a very literal take, no, but it's yeah. it's excellent.
Yeah, to see her in the ground and to remind himself, no, she is dead. This mm-hmm. is real. She is dead. What I didn't understand was him turning himself in after he had just become a dad yep. to little baby Lily and said, sure, Nora, I'll play house. Yep. Like, what are you doing? Because it went from, all right, we're going to try this. It's going to be okay. And this just shows you that Kevin is faulty, mm-hmm. like an earthquake faulty. Yep. You know, he's okay. He's doing it. Nope. Now he wants to literally throw his life away.
Yep.
Has a dead body, wants to get caught by the cops, tells them all this stuff. And then the police officer pretty much was just like, she sucked.
Yeah.
They all sucked. Good for you.
Yep.
Don't ruin your life over this. Go home.
We hardly fucking knew you. That's what she says.
Ugh.
And it's great because here's Kevin, body in the back of his car, slams on the gas behind this car, behind the cop car. And of course, the Pixies are playing Where Is My Mind. I freaking love that song. It is so awesome. It's perfect for Kevin. And this is where the show really excels. It excels really well when we're playing with what Kevin knows real and what he doesn't know is real. And he finds this guilt in Patty. Now, we can assume that he's seeing Patty the entire time. We, as the viewers, just aren't privy to that at this very moment, right? Because we see him in the Murphy's house looking at the couch. Mm-hmm. We see him looking at other things, kind of stopping, looking in the woods as he's driving or whatever. And you know, he puts the music in. So you can infer that he sees Patty. So by going to dig up Patty, yes, he's checking to make sure that she's alive. Excellent, excellent point. I thought that was great. Or make sure that she's dead. But I think he's trying to alleviate that guilt, right? Because as he walks out of the police station, you see this smile on his face like, oh my God, I don't have to bear that burden anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have to bear the burden of knowing that I interred this woman. Even though I didn't kill her, but I was responsible for putting her in that position, he has this guilt lift. And he thinks, I'm cured. Just like, you know, just like how I want my life to be, of all the ills that I've had, I'm moving on with Nora, I'm moving on with this baby, I'm cured.
Well, think about it. When Patty killed herself, mm-hmm. she did it so that Tom would have to live the rest of his life with her blood on his hands.
Oh, with Kevin, you mean?
I mean, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Kevin. So she did that on purpose. He couldn't kill her, so she made it so that she would haunt him mm-hmm. forever.
Exactly.
And he must have just thought that this would be, all right, I'm going to let people know about this. I'm going to get it, as you said, off my chest, mm-hmm. off my conscience. Maybe he thought Patty would stop.
Exactly. Right? Because I'm cured. I'm cured. Hopefully Patty will, I can let go of Patty and Patty can let go of me. Maybe the fact that I have such guilt, that is the catalyst to all of these weird things that I'm experiencing. Mm-hmm. If I get caught, I can let go of it. And when the lady says, do you want to blow up your life? I don't think that he wanted to blow up his life, but part of me thinks that he does. Part of me thinks that he wants to blow up his life because he is stuck. Mm-hmm. He's stuck. He's stuck with a family again. Even though we came up with the idea that he wished for a brand new beginning with his family. And maybe that's it. Maybe he did get his brand new beginning, but is misinterpreting it.
This is like Home Alone. I wished my family would disappear.
And they do. Kevin! And his name's Kevin, too.
Well, speaking of Kevin's family, mm-hmm. we get to see the old family.
Yes.
The one that didn't really disappear, but isn't really in the picture that much. We get to see Tom, and he goes to have breakfast with Jill, and he gives her a note from their mom. And she just gives him an update, like, we're adopting Lily. We're going to keep her name Lily. We're okay. And Tom says, nobody's okay.
Right.
Tom.
Tom's going down a dark path.
Just eat a pancake, man. Or what did he get, a burger? She didn't eat anything. She was like, I am full. I'm happy. I'm eating. Mm-hmm. And she would not read the note from Lori. And come to find out, Lori was in the parking lot. Lori, you can talk now. Like, just
it's
go
okay.
in a diner and say hi. What is wrong with you? You don't need to write anymore.
Do you think it's because she has this guilt too?
Oh, she totally has guilt.
She's got the guilt of knowing that she put her daughter in that position.
Yep.
Right? Knowing that she was gonna croak.
Yep.
Potentially get burned up in that fire.
But it's like, stop being a chicken, Lori. Like, your daughter put herself in a difficult and dangerous situation because she wants to be in your life. Mm-hmm. Yes, you messed up, but put on your big girl pants and walk in that diner. And hug her. It's Jill.
It's your daughter. Jill! Jill!
Oh, my gosh. All right. So that's all we see of Tom and Lori.
Well, Tom did say one thing, though. He says, I'm sick. I'm infected. I don't want to get you sick. Okay, of course. Now, is this just something on the level of just, hey, I'm sick, don't touch me? Yeah, but it's Damon Lindelof. What do you think he's referring to when he says, I'm infected? Is it just infected with that guilt too? Or infected with...
I did not do anything deep with that. I literally took it that he's sick. He's malnourished. Mm-hmm. Look at him. He just had to eat a burger. Like, why is his mom not feeding him? Lori is the worst mom ever. Okay? Go to CVS with your kids. Get him some Tylenol.
Get him some protein bars.
God.
While you're at it.
What? Where are they living? I don't know. I didn't read too much into that, so I appreciate that you did, because I did not. I just saw him hungry and cold, and I said, his mom sucks.
time to move on.
Yeah. You're not a good mom. All right. So we're done. Are we done with Lori and Tom?
Done with Lori and Tom.
I'm done with them. Okay. Yep. Let's go back to Nora and her amazing house. Dun, dun, dun. So excited. MIT comes in, and then Nora turns into fucked up Nora again.
Oh, I know.
She like really started to lose it.
Honey Badger started coming out.
Oh, my God. What do you mean? If I sat at the table, would I have departed too?
What's the difference?
Yep. This yeah. table.
You remember in the show 24 when the president's wife would come along, they played that violin, like the crazy violin.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you need.
Yes.
You need that for Nora. You need the crazy violin.
Gosh. So she sells her house for a heck of a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Like almost $3
million? $2.7 million because MIT wants to come in and research her house because it is
a matter of geography.
A matter of geography. They say it's anomalous. It's anomalous because her family disappeared. And she suggested, well, I was in the house as well. Why wouldn't I have disappeared? And they tell her, well, we're under the understanding that you were at the kitchen counter and your family's at the table. So there's a difference there that we want to figure out. And she said, well, what happens if you do figure out? What's the difference? What are you going to tell me? And they say, we'll be able to know potentially if you give this to us. Here's the thing.
But that's not even where it gets creepy, babe. It gets creepy when they say people want to protect themselves against a reoccurrence. I just got goosebumps because Nora then loses her shit. You think it's going to happen again. Mm-hmm. That's where she goes ape shit and she decides, I need to get
We're
the
getting
hell
the
out
hell
of
here. We're moving. See you later. Now, here's the thing,
he
though.
He says, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't it? Super smart MIT, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about...
No, no, you gotta say it right. Super smart.
Super smart.
There you go.
Where they probably don't use bed lifters, a.k.a. concrete blocks.
Cinder blocks.
Cinder blocks.
I got you.
To lift their beds because they're wicked smart.
How do you like them apples?
Okay. Said, why wouldn't it happen again?
Going down to the Harvard bars, fucking with the smart kids.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
I will get as many Goodwill Hunting references in as possible.
Let's just keep on this crazy train, all right? Kevin Sr., he's out. Mm-hmm. How, who, what, why, when, how? Where's your girlfriend?
Well, let's get back to Nora real quick.
Okay.
Because the MIT guys are there, right? Now, this is big picture. Macro the leftovers, all right? Not micro, macro. Because the MIT guys are there, does that mean now, since they're investigating the departure, right? Since they're investigating it, the show is making it a distinct point to tell you people are investigating the departure. Does that obligate them to give the answer to what happened and why it happened and where did they go?
No. Does it make who? The MIT or the show?
The show, macro the leftovers here. Not MIT, but the leftovers as a story in general.
No.
Why not? Why do you think that?
Because we can't understand everything.
Yep. So just because you think MIT, let's just say...
Oh my God, I have met some people from MIT. They don't know everything.
They don't.
No.
They think they're wicked smart. They're a little smart.
They are. No, it's not that they're a little smart, but there are not answers for everything. And it's great that they're going to send in some really bright people to learn and try to figure this out, mm-hmm. but they're not going to.
And here's the other thing about this part too, is because just because the show is saying that there are people investigating it, you're right, sweetheart. I don't think it obligates the story to tell you what happens.
The point
to them.
Of this was for them to drop the bomb of it could happen again.
Sure.
And I think that's the whole point.
And on another level, I think it also introduces the fact that people are still investigating. It's not like everybody has just moved on 4 years later. It's not like everything is hunky-dory, happy-go-lucky, everything is awesome. They're still investigating, and it would be unrealistic in this world for everything to just move on, right? It would be unrealistic to not show these guys show up mm-hmm. to Nora Durst's house. That's my understanding of it.
Right. Want to continue with crazy people?
Crazy people, let's get the violin out, baby.
Here comes Kevin's dad, mm-hmm. as I said, out of the psych hospital. I don't know where his girlfriend, the mayor, is. She probably ran away after the burn, the whole fire. The whole town went up in fire. I don't know. I would run away. He wants to go to Australia, and he says that he should have been listening to the voices sooner because that is how he got out of the psych hospital.
Because he started doing what they were telling him to do.
Yep, good day, mate.
And it's another reference to Australia within this show.
42 Wallaby Way.
It's another reference to Australia. And again, another Lost reference.
We have to go back, Kate.
Because obviously everything in Lost took, well, not everything, but a lot of things in Lost took place in Australia, including the episode Walkabout. Imagine that. And Damon Lindelof was actually asked about this whole idea of what is so important about Australia. And what he said was, Australia is widely known as a cultural and like almost religious and crazy place of this epic proportions of like weird happenings. It's just a place that where things happen that you can't explain.
Like kangaroos.
What are kangaroos? Inexplicable.
I don't know. Those pouches weird me out.
The pouches do weird me. Like almost like belly buttons. Belly buttons weird you out too.
Oh,
No, but again, going back to this, I know I was kind of delaying a little bit, but Lindelof says that Australia is a place of like cultural significance for these kind of happenings. So he keeps going back to that. He keeps referencing that because it's a significant place for things that happen that are inexplicable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad he's going to Australia. Wasn't Mr. Goodhart from Australia? I thought his accent sounded Australian.
It did sound Australian, but the first reference was the letter from Dirty Santa going to
42 Wallaby Way.
And I did promise the listeners that I would have the name on the letter for you guys and what we forgot, and I don't. I don't have it. I totally screwed it up. Sweetheart, can you please keep talking while I look it up on the computer right now?
You got it. So I'm really excited because Kevin's dad said I had to start listening to the voices. And here's Kevin, and he's got Patty. Is Patty his one and only voice, or does he hear more voices? I don't know. And later on, we're just going to put it out there. Guy with Christmas lights. Oh, gosh. He kind of looks like... I'll have to think of who. He looks like a famous actor that I know of. Anyway, I'll just call him Christmas Lights. So we have Dirty Santa, but then we have Christmas Lights Guy. Christmas Lights Guy goes up to Kevin and like straight up knows and says, I can help you with your problem. And I'm understanding this to mean I can help you with Patty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Kevin needs to hurry up and get his butt to Christmas Lights Guy, because when someone right there knows what's going on, they might be able to help you, man. It can't get any worse.
Mm-hmm.
And if he has Christmas lights, that means he's nice.
I really liked, before they went down to Miracle, though, the dinner scene between Nora and Kevin and Jill. It felt very innocent. It felt very motherly for Nora, almost.
Yeah.
When she was saying, oh, that's not a substitution. It felt like they are starting to cohese as a family unit. And having them go down to Miracle, it puts them in a position where they're all by themselves. Well, I mean, they do have their brother. They do have Matt, which is fair. I would admit that. But
I see more as a clean slate, not all by themselves. I mean, it's so uplifting. There's such happy music playing as they're driving, and even going by all those people who are waiting desperately to get into Miracle, and they even ask, like, "Can I have your wristband?" You know, they're on a pretty good high.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we've got this. We're rolling in dough. We've got our dog.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's packed up. And we're going to go check out Miracle.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. So the Australia thing that I was trying to reference was Lindelof saying, Australia has a sacred healing powers of a mysterious place. That's what he was trying to get at. And Dr. Goodhart, the man collecting water in the beginning of the first episode, indeed did have an Australian accent.
Boom.
And Bad Santa, Dirty Santa, what's his name from Bad Santa? Dirty Santa did give the letter to Michael from the top of the Miracle Tower, and it was addressed to Mr. David Burton.
Burton.
I don't know what the significance of Mr. David Burton is, but that is, as promised, ladies and gentlemen, the name on the letter, Mr. David Burton.
Okay. They're about to enter. And as I said, he gets asked if he can have a wristband from some woman who's been waiting for 2 weeks. These people are like desperate to get in.
They're like all homeless. Like they are literally, quite literally homeless.
But I loved seeing all the different types of people and all the different types of religious people too. I mean, people are coming from all over the world to come to Miracle. So the Garveys get inside. They drive by all the sights that we got to see in the first episode, which was really cool. This is when the timelines start to match up. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. We had the Garveys walking into the house. Oh, wait, the poor dog. The dog is quarantined.
I know. Wait, for what? What's the purpose?
Quarantine.
Yeah, but why? I mean, it's a dog. Like Kevin said, it's a dog. What's it going to do? Well, we got to check the blood work. For
yes,
what?
For illnesses and issues and like rabies and weird
for
things.
For 60 days?
Yes.
That's crazy.
That's like a quarantine period.
Crazy.
I don't know. When I visited a zoo when I was a kid and I learned about quarantine, that's totally normal. When you bring animals that are not from that environment, they need to go through quarantine. Make sure that they're not sick and they're not going to pass it on to any other
animals. Don't take a man's dog, especially when the dog's just normal.
It was not normal for a really long time. They probably should quarantine that dog. I wonder if the dog ever made him feel safe against Patty.
Oh, good one.
Because you know how his dog was like this spirit animal thing? So I wonder if while he has the dog, Patty can't come near him.
I think it's definitely worth discussing because when the dog is there, Kevin isn't seeing Patty, right? I don't think that he is. If I'm wrong, please correct me if I'm wrong. And the times that he does see Patty, the dog isn't there, right? So I wonder if that's correct. I really do. I think that's excellent. You are bringing it today, girlfriend.
I know.
Bringing it.
I know. So they're going, so they lose their dog. Their place got burnt. So obviously they were going to be staying with, was it Isaac? Is that his name?
Yeah, I think that's a clear reference to the fact that this is Lindelof telling you but not telling you that they were supposed to stay with Isaac.
Yeah.
They were renting and the house burned down and they say, oh, the guy's house burned down. Sorry. So great connection there.
And then she buys the house next door to the Garveys.
Honey Badger all over again, baby.
Oh my God.
And this is when it's really funny because we were having a conversation when we were watching this. We were like, I looked at Mary and I said to her, this is you. This is what would happen. I love you so much. Guys, I love my wife more than anything else on this planet. I mean, there is literally nothing else that I love more than my wife. And when she gets determined to do something, nothing will stand in her way. And she doesn't care about the consequences. She doesn't care about how much money is spent. The interactions that Nora had is Mary. It's Jill. Are you in? Do you want to live here? Yes. Okay. Then we're buying the house.
Yeah. Don't mess. Don't mess with my family.
And she's like $3 million. And my wife would do that too. bid three times the amount that's actually worth just to end it.
Hi, you know what? But now they not only are in Miracle, but they own a house in Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty darn cool.
That's huge. Within context here, I mean, the real estate boom within Miracle, because there is a real estate boom. They're saying that this is the only auction this is the first time in for this summer, and real estate prices obviously are being hiked up here, which leads me to believe, by the way, that a lot of this stuff, it's all a ruse. It's all something that is just being played up by the residents of Miracle.
Well, just like what John thinks Isaac was doing.
Correct. To sell people a bill of goods. Because there is no way, obviously, that house, while big and while I'm sure at one point was very nice, is not worth $3 million. It's only worth $3 million because the market is saying it is. Because people are willing to pay that much more money for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, something's fishy. It doesn't pass the eye test with what's happening in this town. Because, you know, in that box that was sent to us, and you remember that box that was sent to us?
Yes.
from The Leftovers? The HBO is freaking awesome with their marketing. What they do is they send out these things to a group called The Watchers. And we are in this group of The Watchers because we have a podcast and we help with the show. Like, we talk about it all the time with you guys, the listeners. So they send us some stuff every once in a while to help promote the show. Like last year, we got the cigarette lighter and we got the trouble box and we got all this really cool stuff. This year, they sent us a map of Jardin, a t-shirt with Miracle, Texas. What else did they send us? Oh, the little vial of water.
Mm-hmm.
They sent us some other stuff, too. I forget now off the top of my head. But on the map of Jardin that they sent to us, it says, at one point, Jardin was just this town that kept losing out. It kept losing out on oil. It kept losing out on gold. It was a financial disaster. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then all of a sudden, nobody departed. And now it is a Mecca. It is a place where people go from all over the world. Religions of all kinds show up there. Not even religious, atheist people. Anybody shows up to this place. And their houses are going at $3 million a clip. Tell me, something ain't right. Something ain't right here. I'm telling you. It's just, it doesn't fit well. It doesn't sit well with me either. I'll tell you that.
Don't forget that this is the time when Kevin gets to see Christmas Lights Guy, and he says, come see me. I can help you with your situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to know more about this gentleman and the fact that he's cool with Michael.
Right.
So he's like some voodoo man who can see Patty or knows what's going on with Kevin a little bit, and yet he prays with super duper Christian Michael.
Correct.
That's pretty cool.
I like that a lot.
It's going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so they move into their house.
Yep.
Oh, no, before they do, They need to stay with Matt.
Oh, poor Matt.
Oh, my God.
The Reverend lets us use the kitchen in the real house anytime we want. Can you imagine how awkward that would be?
Matt is so positive.
He's great.
And Mary doesn't look any better. Well, she's out of bed.
She's out of bed. That helps.
That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Why doesn't he have a normal house?
Because he's Matt Jameson.
God.
Dude, don't need a real house. He's got a shack.
I love how Nora's like, hey, I just bought a $3 million house. Yep. You can probably stay with us because it's huge because it's worth $3 million. It's really not that nice, Nora. But, you know, and he's like, no, I got this. Like, I want to stay nearby the church. This is where we're going to be. And I kind of liked that about him. Yep. I like that he's being a little humble. I mean, sure, he probably thought that it was a gross little house. But
well, is it really being humble? Because he did have this look, like, of reservation, like, I shouldn't leave here. Maybe he feels like by being there near the church that Mary is getting better, right? And when questioned on it, Kevin says, hey, Nora, take a hike. He doesn't want to go. Leave him alone. She says, what, you two bury a body together? Mm-hmm. And what, now you're best friends or whatever she said? That was awesome. You know, the rumors of this show being rebooted, in my opinion, are way over exaggerated. Way, because while this show is definitely somber, as you know, we all know that this show can be somber, it's just better written now.
Yeah.
It's just better written because it can allow itself for little bits of humor like that, where you did get that every once in a while last season. Like, you got it with the ping pong boys, you know, you got it with those kinds of things, but a lot of it was dour, and I will give the doubters that criticism. This season, it's not a reboot, as many people were saying. I think it's a rebirth, and it's allowing itself to be just like the theme song at the beginning. It's encompassing more of what it can be.
Okay.
And it's allowing for bits of humor like this to show up.
Okay. So, you know what was not humorous?
What?
Well, John gives, you know, the pie to the family. Frickin' Patty. That was not humorous. Coming all in.
Mm-hmm.
Smashing Kevin's poor head.
Oh.
He's just trying to light a cigarette.
Oh, how about that, though? Like, I was so nervous when he's letting the gas go and you hear the thing going tick, tick, tick.
And then a little ball of fire came up anyway. And I was, that just scared me. And then up she comes. You treat me like I don't exist.
I know.
I do exist.
She's like, I'm sorry I had to do that.
Now that's what I'm talking about. That right there is a five Damon show.
I would agree.
Up until then, you didn't think that she could touch him and actually physically hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
And this just shows that she's able to go over that line. Yep. Unless he is really crazy and just knocked his head by himself.
Well, Damon Lindelof was asked about this too, and in regards to banging Kevin's head on the stove because he's ignoring her, Lindelof says, it's clear Patty is trying to communicate something, but what that is and whether she's on his side or not is impossible to tell.
Yeah.
She seems to feel like she is. Of course, Kevin does not feel that way. People who believe this is all in his head would say Patty couldn't strike him like that. But that's not true. People who have psychotic breaks,
oh yeah,
not only have real interactions with their imaginary friends, those imaginary friends regularly attack and beat them and enter into their space just the way a real person would.
God, I'm so weirded out.
It almost reminds me of Fight Club. You remember Fight Club?
Yes.
You know, at the end when you realize that Tyler Durden was just a creation of Edward Norton the whole time, and you in the movie you see Tyler Durden fighting Edward Norton in front of the bar. Mm-hmm. But then they go back, they have a flashback, and it's just Edward Norton beating the shit out of himself.
Yeah, that's what might have happened.
It makes you wonder if Kevin, because we all know that Patty is really not there, right? We know that she's really not physically there because she's...
I don't know that.
Well, because she's buried, or at least she was buried for a long time back in Mapleton.
Mm-hmm.
She has somehow managed to come along with Kevin to Miracle. Yes. She didn't get in the car and drive down there. So How is she there?
Maybe it's her ghost.
Okay, let's say it is the ghost. But is Kevin doing it to himself? Did Kevin, like, push his head down on the stove so that he got hit?
No.
Or is it Patty doing that to him?
I don't know. I'm just weirded out. That was the part where I said this is a five. This is a fiver.
Yeah, because you don't know. And again, this is where the show excels. It excels where you don't know what's real with Kevin and what is real. Mm-hmm. Last season, when Kevin's falling asleep on the couch and you hear the police radio go off and then you open up the door and then Dean's there and then the dog is there and you're not really sure if the dog was real or not. Mm-hmm. Really, really great stuff.
I thought it was interesting that they showed Evie have another epilepsy.
Well, no, it was the same epilepsy.
No, I know, but they showed that again.
Okay.
In this episode.
Yeah. Why do you think it's interesting?
I don't know why they needed to show that. So I don't know if it is going to be something that has to really play into her character, that if she doesn't take her medicine, this happens, or if something along the lines that you're saying, was that an act?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's devil's advocate argument for you. They had to show it because they had to show why Kevin had to go back to the house.
Oh, okay, you're right.
You know what I mean?
You're right. I was just trying to get all deep.
Oh, wait, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that's why I prefaced it with the devil's advocate thing.
Oh, you're right.
Because maybe it is an act from Evie. Maybe they're being so conspicuous about it because they want you to notice it, right? Or just it's just a storytelling device. It's part of the plot where we need to get Kevin back to the house to interact with Patty again.
Well, he gets back to the house and he interacts with Nora first and they have a spat.
Well, and before we get into that, because he has to get back to the house to get the pie, and Patty at the beginning of our show says this thing where, very interesting family, the Murphys. It's hard to tell if they're part of your story or you're part of theirs. And Lindelof also commented on this too. He says, I love that line. It sums up perfectly a lot of our conversation in The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. What is reality? There's this concept going all the way back to René Descartes, a French philosopher, that he says that reality and dream states are so alike that you actually never know whether you're experiencing something real or not. We've all had dreams that seem so, so, so real. Descartes says, what if you're having one of those right now? How would you even know the difference? Is it the Murphys who have conjured up Kevin, or Kevin who's conjured up the Murphys?
Whoa.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's like saying, right now, as you guys are listening to this podcast, you're listening to my voice. Are you dreaming this? Am I dreaming of talking to you? Am I dreaming of the fact that I'm married to the most gorgeous woman I've ever met in my life? Mm. And that's the truth. I really believe that, by the way. Am I dreaming that? Now, part of me, because I am married to the most gorgeous woman I've ever met in my life, would suggest that I am dreaming. But it does call into question, are we really awake? Are we really here? Is this the Matrix? Right? And that's what they're going back and forth on in The Leftovers. And that's what he believes is the reasoning behind this saying that Patty has.
Ugh. Well, Kevin and Nora have a fight.
Correct.
And they get over it. But really, what Kevin's upset about is this Patty stuff. Like, he is upset with Nora because this wasn't part of the plan. They were only supposed to be here for a little bit, and now she just spent all of their money.
Oh, and then some, by the way.
Yeah, a lot of money. But, you know, he's just really on edge because of the Patty stuff.
Right, and the light goes off. And you can't blame him. You can't blame him for freaking out a little bit. Mm-hmm. They did just spend $3 million on a piece of shit house. And they wanted to just live here for a little bit. And then what really impressed me behind all of this was Jill. Jill was really impressed me because she says, Dad, don't fuck this up. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? He does the total typical guy thing. What? Well, I'm messing it up? What are you talking about? I'm not messing it up. How am I messing it up? And she says, you're well on the way. No, you haven't fucked it up yet. but you're on the way. And it's so wise of Jill to say this, right? Mm-hmm. It's so wise of her to know that what she has is good. It feels good to her that she is okay. It goes back to that what they said at the beginning of the episode. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's a great arc for her too, because she goes from breaking into Nora's house to find her gun.
Oh yeah.
And say, "Hey, open up. Let me see your bag at dinner, and let me fiddle around there a little bit, and let me see if you got your gun." Remember the first dinner they all had together in season one?
Yes.
And now she's like, "Dad, don't fuck this up." What a great arc for her. And it makes you want to believe in that character. No Kim Bauer syndrome for her either. I love that.
Gone. It is gone. So it ends with, of course, like Kevin going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Freaking out. Because, of course, Patty's going to probably come visit him. But instead, he wakes up soaking wet with a bed lifter tied to his foot.
Damn bed lifter again.
Fish are there, just flopping around.
Yeah.
And then we realize, oh my God, he's in the lake that supposedly Evie has now disappeared from.
Correct. And he goes and he touches the car, and that's the handprint that you have seen on the car in the previous episodes.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Here's the big thing. Who do we know that reads handprints? It's Isaac. Isaac is going to have to read that. You know,
ooh,
John is going to go back to Isaac and be like, "Bro, what's this handprint? What does this mean and who's it from?" Now, whether or not Isaac will help him, maybe it'll be under duress.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he'll be forced to do it. And whether or not Isaac will be able to read the palm print and say, "This is Kevin Garvey, your neighbor.
He's hiding in a ditch."
I don't know. But that handprint is there for a reason. Isaac can read handprints for a reason.
You're right.
This is going to be bad news. And that's why when you see Patty at the end say, uh-oh.
Oh, my God. Chills.
I mean, really, really, really bad shit's coming down the road.
That's why I gave it 5 daemons.
Man, I almost want to revisit it.
Panning to her and having her look at him and go,
uh-oh. Oh.
I was like, oh my God.
Oh,
I don't
my God.
Even know what's going on. I don't understand what's going on in any of the show, and I can't stop.
I can't stop watching it.
No, it's so good.
And I may give it 4.75 daemons. You know what? I'm going to revise my earlier
just
daemon
give it
rating.
A 5.
I can't give it 5. I can't give it 5. But because it's just not there, but I will give it 4.75 daemons. What I love most about what they're doing is that they're sprinkling Patty in for Kevin every once in a while. Now, for those of you who have not played the Batman Arkham games that came out recently, spoiler alert, in the second one, Batman kills the Joker. Kills him. And in the third game, the one that just came out, the Joker haunts Batman because the Joker's blood is in Batman. And the blood is forcing Batman to see the Joker and interact with him. And like in the game, all you want is to see the Joker and how he interacts with Batman again. And I know I'm going to feel the same exact way about Patty this entire season for The Leftovers. It's going to be such a great relationship because you know Kevin is going to be in a certain situation where Patty is like, "Hey, bro, you should probably do this." And Kevin's not going to know what to do. And she's going to be sitting there busting his balls, forcing him to do things that he may not want to do. Is she on his side?
I say yes.
Why?
I just have felt that Patty's known a lot more stuff than we give her credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder.
I don't know. I can't describe why right now, but I think Patty is on Kevin's side right now.
Because again, it calls into question whether or not Patty is a manifestation of Kevin's guilt, or is she really real? Is she part of the voices that the Garveys have heard?
I want to know who Kevin Garvey Sr.'s voices are.
Yeah, that's a great
thing. Who are they?
Thing.
Are they people that he might have killed?
Yeah, that's possible.
Mm.
That's totally possible. You know, and it's great because they show Kevin fall asleep and he ends up in the middle of this in the middle of this pond with all the fish jumping and the water gone and everything, with a cinder block, sorry, a bed lifter tied to his foot, which, by the way, is the picture from the season 2 poster, by the way.
Yeah.
A brilliant poster. I'll put it up on our webpage for this particular episode if you have not seen yet. Gorgeous, gorgeous poster. And in the poster, as a matter of fact, Nora is trying to lift Kevin out of the water. And is Kevin's insanity holding him down? And is Nora the thing that's going to heal him? So Kevin falls asleep. And about this, Lindelof said one more thing. He said throughout the first season, Kevin had sleep experiences. I would say experiences is a little short of what actually happened. But anyway, he would wake up and he would not remember all the things he had done. He was actually a different person when he was asleep, which is a common occurrence. We don't know what the difference between a psychotic break and a spiritual experience is. Brain scans of people who see themselves as shamans have similar patterns to those who are schizophrenic. If you're a rationalist, you think there's no such thing as a shaman, that they're just crazy. If you're a spiritualist, you would say that there's a very fine line between crazy and shaman. It's all about interpretation, and here's a key word, context. It's all about
crazy.
So, what is the context for Kevin's sleep problems, and how the hell? Let's just come out and say it. How the hell did the brother end up there? What the hell happened? Is that Patty doing him like a really bad favor, or is that him? Is he trying to escape himself? Just because now he's in Miracle and Patty is there, does he fall asleep and say, "This sucks, bro, and I am out. I'm outie."
I don't know. Okay, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I walk in my sleep.
She does.
I'm not even joking. Oh, okay, I've only did it a couple of times. I generally talk in my sleep. Mm-hmm. And I'm really scared because my son is exhibiting signs that this is going to happen to him too. So it runs in my family. My dad sleep talks and sleepwalks. And my brother does. And I do. And it is really weird. Now, I know that Kevin has crazy stuff going on, but you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who has sleptwalked, like, I've had to tell Blake, hey, this is something that happens to me, and you got to make sure that I'm safe, because I don't know what's going on. He found me once in my closet looking for chicken.
Homie don't play that.
Yeah. So does Kevin have just a sleep problem?
Or is he looking for chickens?
I don't know. I don't know.
Kevin's looking for chickens. But that may stick.
I just love that they made it that he calls it that he walks in his sleep. I just love it, because those people that have this issue, like myself, it's scary.
You want to get the listener feedback?
I do.
All right, let's do it. We got an email from Wim, and he said that he knows what the departure is. Knows it, right off the bat.
Oh my God, tell me.
And Wim says, as soon as he saw the opening shots of episode 1, it was clear to him. In the cave people age, an earthquake happened, and the woman who we were seeing had no idea what happened.
Yeah.
She had no explanation for what happened, as this never happened before.
Yeah.
All she knew was that she was separated from the rest of her people, separated by rock and debris.
Hmm.
This is exactly what happened on October 14th. A natural disaster hit. Only it is of a kind that we haven't seen before, so we can't understand it. It is, in fact, a cosmoquake.
What? This is like that movie Interstellar.
And just like the earthquake in season 2, the cosmoquake separated people. Only they are not separated by debris, but by space and time. So now we, the departed, are alive. But there is a gap in space and time, and she is the bridge.
Who's she?
Oh, I don't know. Sorry.
The cave woman?
Yeah, probably. Now for the cave example. Who departed and who got left behind? Were the people in the cave left behind? Or was the woman outside left behind? It all depends on your point of view. Ooh, good Star Wars reference again. So also in the now, who are really departed? The 2% of the people, because they are fewer than the 98%? and because it's only them we get to see. I think it is, in fact, the other way around. The Cosmo Quake ripped the space-time continuum in two and split the world. One part the original, with 2% of the population remaining, and one part a lesser copy of The Leftovers.
Well, then, what happened now? Because there was another little earthquake, and that's what happened to Evie? Is there another Cosmo Quake? Is she going to see Matt McConaughey? I mean, that's what I want to know. Because if so, I'll be a leftover.
Greatest crossover ever.
Thank you. All right. On Facebook, Mark Bendixson said, I noticed the announcement at the Miracle Welcome Center. Mm-hmm. Sort of explain the numbers posted around town. They apparently designate historical markers.
Oh, so that means they're keeping it special for a reason. Joanne Silverman says, interesting that the Kevin point of view timeline included everything but the earthquake at the end. Was anyone else waiting for the earthquake to happen? Instead, we see Kevin waking up in the water. Not sure what I'm implying or even saying right now, but that is a great, fantastic acknowledgement of what actually happened. Is Kevin the problem? Is he what's created the earthquake?
Well, Melanie thinks that he somewhat is a problem because she said, does anyone else get the feeling, this is Melanie Hess, that Garvey is falling back into his old life, the life he was miserable in before the departure? The look on his face when he is told the baby is his, again, it's the same look as in the restaurant when he realizes that it is the same old life. He's always hidden his true feelings, and maybe this lapse in sanity is a form of purging that he's been hiding it all along. That's when he decides to essentially run somewhere else to change his life. Maybe the center block. Ooh, that's a different
Cinder.
Way.
Cinder, not center. I think she just mispronounced it or misspelled it.
Okay, or a bed lifter. Around his ankle was him trying seven. To end his life in his subconscious where he cannot hide how he really feels.
Wow, Melanie, you and I are on the same exact page. I love this. JJRV says on Twitter, Nora's getting all Honey Badger again with the house and Lily.
Honey Badger don't care. Kendra Spring Klasick on Twitter said, we really don't know each other. That was the quote from the show. Thank you. So few shows take the time to acknowledge this. Mm-hmm.
At the Daily Review says, making a case Nora Durst is for the TV's best girlfriend. 100%.
Caitlin May says, Kevin Garvey is my spirit animal. Melissa Lendhart, sign I'm too invested in one character. I only care about Kevin's predicament because it's going to ruin Nora's life.
Ugh.
And I love The Leftovers, but as each episode builds the tension, I feel so disappointed with no climax. Can you throw a girl a bone?
Katie Ricky says, the writers of The Leftovers need to be put in a mental hospital. But, you know, one where they can still create this kind of gold.
And Mike Boyce, so The Leftovers is one of, if not the best shows on TV right now. And the Living Reminders podcast should be a mandatory supplement to the show.
Aw, Mike, thank you very much. That is very kind of you. My love, voicemail time, ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do it.
Hello, Mary and Blake. This is Rafe Collins Jr. I just wanted to say, you know, about John's character, that we know this guy isn't necessarily the salt of the earth. He went to jail for attempted murder. So, you know, an absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I am curious, as you guys are curious, how he got all this power in this town. I think that there's something bigger than him going on. He might be a puppet. He might have the support of larger forces in the town or maybe even the government. The existence of a town that nobody disappeared or departed from would be of interest to the Federal Bureau of Departures. I didn't get the name right. So I think that maybe he has larger forces backing him. You know, I even though this is a small town, I can't imagine that one person would be able to do this in a town without somebody else's say-so. So I think this is a longer chain. I think Kevin Carroll is a great actor, and he has one of the most menacing smiles in the business. So I have never seen a person whose smile scared me so much outside of Annie Wilkes in Misery. Okay. Love you guys. Love what you're doing. And see you on Facebook.
Rafe, thanks so much for calling in. I always enjoy the Facebook group that we're in for the Leftovers chat. But I would say that I think you're right about someone being a little bit higher up than John and giving him the authority to wreak havoc on this town. I don't see anybody sitting idly by and letting John do whatever he feels like to this town unless he has some kind of authorial or authoritative, whatever. You know what I mean? Unless he has some kind of background that it's someone supporting him. I don't see it. So I think you might be right. We'll see what happens on.
Hi, this is Mick from Perth, Australia. Just wanted to contact you guys again and say I've endeavored to get others to watch this show so I can have people to talk to and talk with about The Leftovers, but no luck. So having your podcast is really, it's great. It's what I need because I'm the only person that I know who watches The Leftovers. None of my friends nor my wife will watch it as much as I talk and post about it on my social media pages. Yeah, really loved the premiere of season two and really loved hearing you guys talk about it as well. My standout image was, for me, was the bride watering the garden. Sort of reminded me of the quirkiness of David Lynch. Anyway, just wanted to contact you guys again and say a big thanks for the podcast. This lonely guy from Australia has just got no one to talk to with about The Leftovers. Anyway, cheers, bye, see you later.
Mick, I love that you call, and I love the fact that you want to talk about Leftovers with us. I'm always down with that. I don't care if nobody in Australia wants to talk about it, even though half of The Leftovers is going to be about Australia for some reason. Nobody wants to watch it. You always have a community here, not only with us, but with the other listeners as well. So thank you. Thank you very much for taking the time to call us and say the kind words about the show. We really appreciate it.
Hi, Mary and Blake. It's Missy. How you guys doing? I thought episode two was awesome, and this is one of those episodes I wish we could have just all sat together in the studio and dissected every scene, every detail, every moment, and, you know, so much to talk about, huh? But I'm just going to pinpoint a few things out. First off, I thought it was smart how they went back into season one and continued where the Garveys left off. I appreciated that. I didn't see it as a flashback. But I did notice that we're watching from Kevin's point of view now, as opposed to last week's episode with the Murphys. Second, okay, so who cringed with me at the laundromat parking lot scene and the situation with the baby in the back? It was like the same exact scene as in the pilot with baby Sam. And it was spooky, you know? It was like Lindelof has this powerful strategy to just make us feel this way. How terrifying. How does he expect us to sleep at night? And I know it's his goal and everything, but he's winning in my head. Third, I was a big fan of the attack of the washing machine. I noticed on Twitter lots of people were bashing the Pixie song, Where Is My Mind, and how it's overly used and Fight Club in it and whatever. But I love the song, and in my opinion, it was the perfect song choice for Kevin's psychosis that's fully emerging, you know, at this time. I wish I would have known that we were going to have a surprise guest star in this episode. Guys, the paper towel roll, I don't care who think it's stupid. I love the Easter egg hunts. I'm having a ball with this show. That had to have been intentional, right? Or are they kidding? The same paper towel roll with Nora on departure day. They got me looking for clues everywhere now, guys. Remember, back to season one, context is everything. So just an overall review. I highly enjoyed the music themes. I especially appreciated the difference in the camera angles the directors used this time on Kevin. It almost feels as if they literally zoomed in on his emotions. It's a different perspective, you know? I don't know if you can tell. It's Kevin's perspective. And I felt that they really emphasized on this. So much, so much more to discuss. I'm going to be rewatching to see if I missed anything, but I'm going to wrap it up and I'll give it 5 demons. So let's get some more callers in on this. Okay, thanks, guys.
Missy, I love the Pixie song too. It may be overused, it may be a little bit cliche, but it is a lot of. It's a great song for someone that you just is losing their brain. And as a matter of fact, you did bring up the paper towel roll, and what a great pickup! And I loved all of the cutscenes, by the way, going back to season one with Lori and all of the things that are happening with the GR. And again, it's more proof that nothing is being left behind. This is not a reboot. There are consequences to what happened in the previous season. If this was a reboot, it would mean that it didn't exist. But you can tell that everything is happening here for a reason, number one, and Kevin is feeling the pressure of what happened last season, and it's absolutely brilliant. And those quick cut scenes just totally highlight the fact that not only is he experiencing it in his mind as he's losing his mind, but you, the viewer, are experiencing it like he is, very quickly, very rapidly. It's just almost lightning strikes of emotion and visceral hatred and anger and fear and hurt, and it's you're experiencing it just like Kevin is, and it's gorgeous. I'm so happy that they chose to do that.
Hi guys, this is Missy from Slidell, Louisiana. I was just calling because I saw your post on Facebook and it tickled me so much. I thought the only thing that was worse than disappointing Patty would be disappointing Marion Blake. So here are some questions that I had about last night's episode. The first one being, where did the owners of Kevin and Nora's new house go? I think it's kind of interesting that there would be any vacant houses in Miracle. So that leads me to my second question. How are there multiple houses available to be auctioned? You would think with as wondrous of a place as Miracle is, there would be zero vacant houses. People wouldn't be leaving. Where are they going? So then my next question is, who do you think the man in the trailer in the woods might be? Clearly he's special. He can sense or just know something is up with Kevin. So what's his story? So I believe the son's name of the neighbors is Michael, and we know Michael goes over there to see him, and he doesn't really mention that to his family, though they know he goes to see the guy, what is he, Dirty Santa, on his little podium up there. So who could he be? He knows he's special. So my theory on that is that he is probably estranged family. I'm wondering maybe could he possibly be Grandpa? You don't really see any other family. I know we're just fresh into the season, but that's going to be my theory as to who he might be. As far as Kevin swimming with the fishies, I think it's safe to rule out that his neighbors had anything to do with it, because we see the neighbors come to the scene where the girls are missing. I'm sorry, I'm scatterbrained. But what if Kevin, Tyler, Durden, Garvey did this to himself? We know he blacks out. He has these little dreams, and clearly something's wrong. We see him with the headphones. He sees something or he feels something, and he has to kind of just drown everything out. What if that's a preventative way to keep him from disappearing, from going to this sleeper Kevin self, the Tyler Durden version of himself? So I'm wondering if maybe he can't cope with this other version of himself, so he wanted to end it, and whatever is happening in the town won't let him. Maybe that's why the water disappeared, because it's not okay for Kevin to die. Maybe he really does have a purpose. So anyway, I just wanted to leave you with congratulations on the latest baby officially. And we love hearing you, and you guys take care. Bye-bye.
Missy, thank you for calling. First of all, thank you again number one, for the congratulations on our new child. Yes, we did have another baby, and her name is Felicity, and she's gorgeous. and she's probably the light of my life. Secondly, thank you for not disappointing Patty. I did put up a post on our Facebook page saying with a picture of Patty saying that we were disappointed. Well, Patty was disappointed by the amount of voicemails we got, and all of you came out in droves. You do not want to disappoint Patty. I can tell that. So thank you. As for your questions, the first question being the auctions, part of me thinks that they do not sell houses unless it is auctioned. That way you get the most amount of money possible. You have a bidding war, so that drives up real estate prices. The next question you have is, who is the guy that Michael went to go see? I think your theory about possibly being grandpa or estranged family is a good one. Is this the person that John tried to murder? Is this why Michael is going to see the Christmas lights guy without John's knowledge? Is this the reason why? Maybe John knew or sees that this guy is special in his own way, doesn't believe it, and decides this guy's out. I mean, who knows? We'll see. And as for the thing with Kevin, what a great idea that the water disappeared to make sure that Kevin doesn't die. What a fantastic idea. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. But maybe Kevin does have a purpose. We just don't know, and he doesn't know what it is quite yet, especially concerning the idea that we don't know if his story is intertwined with the Murphys or the Murphys is intertwined with his story. So really good food for thought there. Thank you so much for calling in, Missy. I really appreciate it.
So this is Lisa Nanager calling. Here are some of the things that I found out watching last night's show and watching the previous show. Kevin, I think he thinks that Patty tried to kill him, but I think that Kevin caused his own injury in the kitchen, and I hate to bring up the L word, but this reminds me, the relationship that he's having with Patty reminds me of Hurley and Dave from the from Lost. Also, today I've done some investigating, and I was led to the Mormons being a big clue, and I researched what Mormons think of animals, and the last season that we saw, you know, they were killing the dogs and animals weren't living except Kevin's dog. So anyway, I found this information that's in the history of the church, or the Mormon church, and it says, men must become harmless before the brute creation. And when men lose their vicious disposition and cease to destroy the animal race, the lion and the lamb can dwell together, and the sucking child can play with the serpent in safety. And then it says, brethren, you are not to kill a serpent, a bird, an animal of any kind, unless it becomes necessary to preserve yourself from hunger. And then it was like the history of the church, and it was 2.17/72. Also, the population number has to do with the Mormon, has to do from the beginning, like 1838 or something like that. Their population number is, if you actually take, I believe it was 21, 21, 21, and it equals like 10 million. But if you break that down, it comes out to their population number.
Lisa, thank you so much for calling in. I think I'm just going to leave it right there with what you said. That was unbelievable, especially with the population number and the research, but the serpent, the baby. Excellent stuff. Thank you for all that great research, and thank you for calling in. It's a real honor to have you guys call in. Thank you.
Hi, this is Kendra from Lincoln, Nebraska. I also love the use of the Pixie song, Where Is My Mind? I've always loved that song, but it perfectly parallels Kevin's battle with his guilt that runs throughout this entire episode. Again, Damon Lindelof decided to give Moms Everywhere a good swift kick in the ovaries by having him drown out Lily's cries by sticking his earbuds in. Interesting, though, he takes a good long look at the rack of white shirts before leaving the laundromat. He's also late for everything still. This is a coping mechanism that I just don't understand. I have an uncle who started this after a family tragedy, and I don't get it. I really don't. But I recognize it. This whole episode is basically riffing on Crime and Punishment. Kevin is just being devoured by guilt in a truly Dostoevskian way. Patty being the physical manifestation of it. She isn't a ghost, just his subconscious. It doesn't stop her from haunting him, though. We also see Kevin's terror at the concept of truly moving on in his frustration over the house. When he says, try it out, we'll see what happens, he's not just talking about the house. And Nora knows it, and so does Jill. And Jill really is the one who is desperate for the stability that Nora would bring. He's talking about his relationship with Nora, and even worse, he's talking about Lily. Over the course of this show, we've seen babies lost, abandoned, imperiled, and in this episode, neglected in regards to Lily and rejected in regards to the one-month-old that was in need of a home when they were trying to adopt Lily. When Kevin wakes up with cinder blocks tied to his ankles, saved by the vanishing water, it begs the question, how often do people and or things vanish from this spot? If no one actually departed on October 14th, which I don't really believe yet, what if Miracle is one of the only places that new disappearances are happening? Also, when Nora hears the theory that she could have departed too had she been at the table, it seems something final has been stolen from her. It was mere chance, or perhaps no larger meaning or purpose was attached to it. And when she hears that, I think that it robs her of something elemental and substantial in her life. And I wasn't totally sold on Patty's appearances as a plot device because Lindelof doesn't quite seem to know how to spin it. It's not shocking enough for a jump scare, but it's not played lightly enough for irony. I get what he's trying to do, but it hasn't properly landed for me yet. Overall, I thought this was a great episode. I loved seeing all the events of last week from Kevin's perspective. The Welcome Center reminded me of the military compound in 28 Weeks Later. I'm really anxious to see how the rest of the season plays out. I have some questions, like who drugged the pie, because obviously that's what happened. They ate the pie, or Kevin primarily ate the pie and woke up in the lake. And why did that happen? If they were trying to get at John, why did they follow through with Kevin? So if they were trying to get at Kevin, why? Who was it? So anyway, I'm really, really anxious to see and hear what everybody else's theories are. Thanks. Have a good night. Bye.
Kendra, there are two things that you mentioned that I really like. First, well, actually three things. First, you mentioned about the white shirts. What a great callback to season one and knowing that Kevin still is uneasy about those white shirts. It still eats at him. I love that little callback. Secondly, you think that Patty isn't working for you, and I respect your opinion. I get that. But for me, I mean, it totally works. I don't think it's either it's meant to be scary or ironic. I think she's just meant to be kind of like that Greek choir, like in Greek tragedies, the choir would come through and sing and give you context and what's happening. I think she's like that. She's just there to comment and push him in a direction. So is she a plot device? I don't think she's a plot device, but I think that she is something special that we have yet to fully flesh out quite yet. And as it relates to the pie being drugged, wow, what a great thought. I mean, maybe it is drugged, and who is trying to drug John? And maybe they did go through with it with Kevin. What was that all meant to be? And maybe they did eat the pie. I don't know. You don't see them eating the pie, and I will eat my hat if I'm wrong. But I can only imagine what that means for Kevin and what position that put him in. So yeah, really interesting stuff. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for calling in. As always, we love everything that you have to say. But now it is time for the Brian David's Thought of the Week.
Mary and Blake, this is Brian David's from the Film Schlubs podcast. This episode was hauntingly beautiful. If The Leftovers isn't the best show on television at this point, I don't know what is. As I pointed out last week, we now see the origin of the handprint on the girl's car. It's none other than Kevin Garvey's. We are left to assume that Isaac will read the handprint and expose Kevin's presence at the spring, plus a whole lot more about Kevin that he doesn't want getting out into the open. This does not bode well for our hallucinating hero, who is likely instructed by Patty to do whatever led him to the spring, a la Dean leading him to abduct Patty and take her to Cairo. Did Patty want Kevin to get caught, hence the cinder block, so he'd get blamed for the water being gone? What's interesting, though, is that Virgil already seems aware of Kevin's situation when he's in the visitor center. This adds weight to my theory that Virgil has a deeper involvement in Evie's disappearance, as he appears to be a rather meaningful and gifted character. By the way, did anyone else get a poor man's Jurassic Park slash world vibe out of the visitor center? Also, if Miracle is truly special, why are they so concerned about dogs being in the town? Shouldn't dogs be immune to the radical behavior they suffered in Mapleton if Miracle is truly special? In the limited time we've seen of the town, have we seen any quarantined dogs in Miracle yet? This could be a clue as to the town's true nature. Back to Virgil. Could it be that Virgil is John's father? That would explain why Michael did not disclose to John that he was going to pray with Virgil after feeding the Pillar Man on the night of Evie's disappearance. Is Virgil the man that John attempted to murder? Do Virgil's abilities explain why John is so threatened by powers or abilities similar to those of Isaac's? Also, for Evie to disappear on John's birthday, that seems awfully personal. Virgil would certainly know John's birthday better than anyone. But what if we've misunderstood John to this point? He may be the antagonist for the time being, but we still don't know his reasons for doing what he does. I'm about to touch on some mild Lost spoilers, so proceed with caution if you happen to be among the rarefied bunch who did not watch Lost but watches The Leftovers.
We have to go back, Kate.
I keep getting shades of Ben Linus with John, and I'll be expanding on this a bit more in this week's blog post at thelivingreminders.com. First off, Ben, who was the antagonist in Lost for a prolonged stretch, was, among other things, trying to protect the island from those who would misuse it. And yes, I know he was not the ultimate protector, but Ben did a number of terrible things because he believed he was doing the right thing in the long run, whether we as the audience or the rest of the characters realized it yet or not. What if John is protecting the town of Miracle in the same way that Ben was protecting the island? In episode 1, we saw John contradict his supposed lack of faith when he feared the garbage disposal after Isaac's ominous words. What if John believes that Miracle has even more gifts than just no departures? What if he's protecting the town from the outside world's discovery of even more secrets such as healing powers? That would explain the bird in the shoebox that might have been resurrected. If they're already overrun by people seeking refuge from another departure, one can only imagine what would happen if potential healing powers were broadcast to the world. What if the town is filled with holy Wayne types, such as Isaac and Virgil, people John cares about, and he's simply trying to send a message to keep this type of witchcraft quiet for their own protection? Does John fear the ATFC coming to Miracle and doing what they did to Wayne's compound? Is this his way of protecting his father, his friends, his family? If last week's theory proves correct, the theory that Evie resented her father so much so that she'd stage her disappearance, it aligns with Ben's contentious relationship with Alex, his adopted daughter, who resented him for not letting her date Carl. To her, he was being completely overprotective, but he couldn't risk her getting pregnant one day and suffering the cruel fate of most pregnant women on the island. Ben did everything possible to reverse that fate, something we weren't aware of when we first saw all the terrible things he was doing. So are the writers creating an arc for John like Damon did for Ben Linus, where we're meant to root against him from the start, only to understand his decisions later, despite all the terrible things he did along the way? If Virgil is in fact John's father and John tried to kill him, then that brings us right back to last week's theme, daddy issues. Who else had daddy issues? Ben Linus? What did Ben do to his father? Once again, who else protected a place from the outside world discovering it? Ben Linus. To understand John and his motivations, do we need to revisit Ben first? I'll figure that out in my blog post this week. Lastly, I don't know if Miracle is special or not yet, but I still think the point of this story is to stop the wrongdoing in this town as it's taking advantage of people regardless if it's special or not. It's selling the illusion of safety as Nora's excessive real estate purchase proves. They're kicking locals out of their homes who have a right to be there still. But what I do know is that we have some phenomenal television coming our way if the first two episodes are any indication. I want to say thank you to Mary and Blake for the time as well as the platform. And a big thank you to you, the audience, for listening. You can follow me, Brian Davids, on Twitter at BDF331.
All right, Brian, thank you so much. Can't wait till you come back next week. I always love what you have to offer. But for now, my love, are you ready for the tweet of the week?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. This week's tweet of the week is from J.E. They say, I love this show so much that I want to take it behind the junior high school and get it pregnant.
Ew.
Come on, that's pretty funny. I don't care who you are.
No.
No, you don't think so?
No.
Oh, come on.
I've been pregnant twice.
Yeah, not fun?
No.
Did we do it behind a junior high school?
No.
Well, J.E., congratulations for being this week's tweet of the week. And as a special gift to you, you get a $20 gift card from the Tag Your It Etsy shop just for being this week's tweet of the week. So again, J.E., congratulations. Well, my love, I think it is now time for the sudden theory of the week.
Go for it.
All right. Well, before I get mine, you got one?
Oh, let's see. I feel like I already like dropped mine during the episode again.
All right.
Man, I do it too soon.
you gotta hold out every once in a while.
I do.
Well, I'll give you my sudden theory. I think Nora's going to die. I think Nora's dying by the end of the season.
Stop.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Stop.
I'm going there.
Stop. I'm telling you to stop.
Do you really not want me to continue?
Go there. Okay,
all right,
do
I'm
it.
Going. Nora's going to die because she has to battle for Kevin's sanity. And there are too many things that surround Kevin. Whether he's a bridge or he sees things or he talks to people, she is what makes him a good person and brings him out of that. And it's nice to think that she will be able to bring him out. But this conflict with John Murphy is going to push everything over the edge. John Murphy ain't a good dude. Attempted murder. They already said it. You do not introduce a gun unless you intend to bring it back in the third act.
Okay, so how do you think Nora's going to die?
I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to tell you this. It's going to come out of a conflict between Kevin and John. And Kevin is going to have to pay a price. Somehow, some way, he's going to have to pay a price in order to move beyond. And everything with Nora just seems too perfect. This is Damon Lindelof we're talking about.
This is Nora who we're talking about, the most effed up woman.
But she's making a case for TV's best girlfriend right now, and everything is just a little too nice.
Oh my God, I'm so scared.
Granted, we do have plenty of time for things to go awry.
I'm so scared for her now.
But I'm telling you, she's going to die. She's totally going to croak. Oh. And that is my sudden theory of the week.
Oh. Please hang up and try again.
All right, my love, final thoughts for the episode. What do you got?
I'm too messed up now. I loved the episode a lot until you just ruined it for me.
I'm sorry. My final thoughts are I really, 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 really love what they're doing with Patty. And I'm so happy that this episode came when it did. It started everything off with between the first episode and now this episode. The Leftover second season has got off on an amazing start.
I agree.
And it's a much better start than the first season. Much, much better.
It's amazing.
All right, my love. You ready to close out the show?
Yep.
Let's do it.
want to remind you all that the conversation about these episodes has not ended. We want to keep talking with you, so please reach out to us. Our handles on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all the same. It's Living Reminders.
And if the social media ain't enough for you, you can always reach us on the email machine at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to thelivingreminders.com to see all of our previous episodes, and you can hear our interview with Ann Dowd.
And while you're there, check out the support tab on the top right-hand corner of the page, where you can find a whole bunch of different ways to support us. And it's whether it's going on Patreon and donating $1 or $2 or going on PayPal or reviewing us on iTunes, whatever. There are a bunch of different ways you can support the Living Reminders and help keeping this a free podcast. And the best thing you can do for a free podcast, by the way, is tell a friend. If you really feel like what we do here gives value to you and we help give a better experience for the leftovers, tell a friend that we exist, that the show exists, and that you love both of us.
The other great thing that you can do is head on over to iTunes and leave us a rating and a reviewing. And if you see any of the reviews up there that you like, tell us. Click the yes that it was helpful. One of the reviews that we want to read right now is from Chris Hartwell. He said, great podcast. Love this show and love how you're interacting with it. Keep it up. And Chris also has a YouTube channel and he gets up and reviews the show as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
And search him. Brilliant. It's really, really good.
Brilliant, brilliant videos. Please go ahead and watch him. He's awesome. And also, while you're on the website, there's also a little tab that says blog. And we have the Living Reminders blog right there. And we have a bunch of great articles about what it means to be a Leftovers fan, theories, ideas, philosophies, breaking down the show. Chris's videos will be on there as well. Everything is going to be at the Living Reminders blog. So please go to livingreminders.com, click on blog, and you'll be able to see all the writers who are fans, by the way, fans of ours and of the show, who are writing these articles for you guys, the fans.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.